back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Back half of Sabres Live here on a Thursday. Marty has already shown great enthusiasm for the upcoming month because it is his birthday month.
It's also U.S. Open month for Shayna because of tennis. So
Shayna,
that is
when
awesome.
When is your birthday month?
I'm May. I'm a Gemini. Can't you tell? So it's Marty's birthday month. We have hardcore tennis, which I think we both agree is kind of the fave, and the U.S. Open at the end of it. So now the only true solution is you getting a vacation to the U.S. Open, right, for your birthday.
I mean, I would love that, but it doesn't usually work well for me. Even when I was with the Rangers, Shayna, I didn't go to U.S. Open. I don't know. It didn't work. It's like getting ready for school with the kids and everything. It just gets a little crazy. Also, I mean, if you're in Buffalo, and because we're going to adopt you as a Bills fan now, so Hard Knocks is starting on the 5th, right? So that's at Bills training camp. So I feel like my month of August is going to be like so much fun. I did some plumbing work at the house last week. I was telling producer Jeff, I'm doing some electrical work at the house today. I'm all in. Like, this is going to be a great month.
I love it because I feel like all of a sudden I kept thinking August, September, and I'm like, wait, July didn't even end yet. And I'm thinking this last week, and it's like you get to this point and you just speed through till the end. And like, if you go shopping, because I was, you know, shopping for crafts, it's all Halloween. Did I buy stuff for Halloween? Yes. Yes, because I'm a sucker. They got me. So I'm like, summer's over, and I like that we're enthusiastic about August. We have to respect August.
I have two questions, and then you and Marty can take the segment. how are you handling the heat, and what will be the beverage of choice at the U.S. Open for you this year?
Oh, it's the honeydews every day of the week. I don't care that they have like Aperol spritzes, and that's nice. I can have that any day. I need the honeydews. And the days I'm not there, I'm just going to make them because I have 3,000 cups now because I'm hoarding them. How do I handle the heat? I stay in water. I am not a heat person at all. I don't do like very well in the heat. So I just like read books in the pool and I'm very happy. Like, I tried doing embroidery by the pool yesterday and I had to go in the water within like 10 minutes.
Okay. When you say you read books, do you also bring like electronics like an iPad or a phone? Do you read hockey articles? Because we got a doozy that dropped on The Athletic, Shayna. The 10 best and 10 worst contracts. We just had the Sabres sign Devon Levi to a 2-year deal, and in 2 years, we could say Devon Levi, best contract, making just under $900,000. And who knows? He could be the number one goalie of the Sabres, right? Who knows? Like, Dustin Wolf is making, what, $850,000? He's, you know, a standout in Calgary. So I like to start with the worst contracts because obviously I think Dom put Jonathan Huberdeau as number one. I was a little surprised with Chandler Stephenson just because Duffers always loved Chandler Stephenson with Vegas and still performed well. So what'd you make out of Sam Bennett also on that list of the worst contracts for the upcoming year? Like, I was surprised by that as well. So what did you take out of the worst contracts moving into the 25-26 seasons?
There's always a contract that I feel like there's no better motivator than spite. So Dom's going to put it there. I remember like the days of Nick Suzuki being on here and people freaking out at him and then Nick Suzuki popping off. And it's like, yes, now it's good. So I think Sam Bennett will take that spite because naturally he's reading all of these articles while he's celebrating his cup win and will prove him wrong. I think one of the more interesting contracts to me on this list, the more interesting ones are the defensive contracts. And I look at two in particular, like Cody Ceci, we expect to be there. It's Nick Hague and it's Ryan Pulak. And I think Ryan Pulak, like, to me, was the guy on the Islanders blue line. And then Dobson became that. And you think of him more of like this like pairing, right? It's Pelican Pulak. You think of them together. They're this great entity together. And they're a really good shutdown second pair. And I think they were, both of them had two of the more cost-effective contracts. His game declined so much over this last year. And Pulak is a guy that I thought improved a lot when Petrangelo took over. So it's interesting to see how his game just didn't translate as well under a full season of him. I'm so curious how it changes now with different assistant coaches coming in, because it's something we talk about all the time, right? Like, what's the value of an assistant coach? How much do they bring? How much input do they get? So I'm curious how that turnover will help and if he can rebound. The other one that stands out is Nick Hague, because To me, a year ago, I think we all projected him to be this like really interesting player that Vegas was going to have to get rid of just to balance the books. And it all depended on how his game went this past season. And it went pretty far down. Like, he trended down a lot within a really good system. This isn't like the Islanders where it's like the team is trending down, therefore the player is as a part of it, right? Like, the Golden Knights are still good, but his third pair of minutes were pretty tough. I'm curious how it ages, because we've seen in the last year players go to Nashville and regress. So how can they make that trend stop with Haig when they already have someone like Brady Shea on this list?
Is it the same thing with Ivan Provorov? Because he's on the list at number two. He was a UFA, right? And Columbus decided to give him a 7-year deal at $8.5 million, kind of taking him off the table. But everybody's had that cap space. So is this one of those situations where Columbus gave him maybe a little extra money to keep him, knowing they overpaid? But, I mean, you have the cap space and better use it.
Yeah, like, two things can be true here. Like, he was a good fit there and they have the space, but the contract is still bad, especially when you look at it relative to the other deals being signed. And I think we all thought defensemen were going to get overpaid this year, and we thought Gavrikov would get some like astronomical number, and he didn't. So that kind of changes the tone of things. Yes, you're going to have guys getting overpaid like Dumoulin and CeCe, but when you get a contract done early, in theory, you would think it's to avoid paying market price, right? On July 1st, the market price is going to be set. So if you're working ahead of time, you're trying to get under that curve before the curve is set. And it just isn't happening. So I think that's a problem. I think the long term of it with his age in mind is kind of a problem. I don't think highly enough of him to take better strides. I think what he is what he is, and that's fine. And it works for now. But in those later years, it might become a problem. So it's not a good contract. I don't see him outperforming it at any point in it, but the Blue Jackets at least know what they're getting in him.
Since we're still on the Blue Jackets,
yeah,
what is ever going to happen with Severson and his deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in this unique position of like having all of this cap space, so they can weather the storm better than others and say, okay, well, we paid you to be this top four guy and you're not that, and that's okay, right? And just roll with Fabro and Werenski and let them cook and see what young guys can come up around them, and then eventually maybe they can send that contract off, because there are teams right now that need cap, right? They're below the cap floor. They're going to need to take on more. In 2 or 3 years, say the Blue Jackets no longer have all that cap flexibility and need to get rid of him, I think you'll always have someone ready to take on a bad contract. We see a lot of rebuilding teams out there, and maybe more teams will open up their cap retention slots and use them a little bit better now, because, you know, you can't do the double retention within 75 days. Like, there's going to be different rules. So I think they'll find a way to move that contract if need be. But it's not a great starting point when they're not even at their window of contention. It's just opening now after this last year of progress to have those two contracts as weights on the back end.
Yeah.
Now let's move to the best contracts. And I think the 10 contracts that Dom put out there on The Athletic, they're really good contracts. But Shayna, how is Tage Thompson not on that list of best contracts? I mean, this is year three of a 7-year deal, paying him just over $7 million. He could score 50 this year. I mean, he had 44 last year, and the power play was not good. Like, I think it's easy for him to get to 40, and he could definitely get to 50 and $7 million. Like, he, in my opinion, he's one of the best valued contract in the NHL.
Okay. If he is a center, I fully agree with you. If he's a winger, I don't think so. I drop value a little bit there, because I think we look at wingers a lot differently than we do centers, right? Because someone like Sam Reinhart plays wing. He can jump to center if need be, but I feel like the Panthers got a little bit of a discount because he's a winger at this point in his career. Tage Thompson was signed as a center to earn the accents back and get back to our guy Tajay. I would like to see him at center, and I look at the Sabres lineup too, and I still think that they're better if he's down the middle. So if he can combine all of these elements that we know he has, right? The electric scoring, and oh my God, does he have that? The threat on the power play, the defensive improvements, which I think we saw over the last year too, because that was an area of his game that it was a high risk, high reward style from him. If he can do all that and play center, I think he's going to get back onto this list 100%. But if he does it as a winger, or he doesn't, it's one other element missing, right? He plays center, but the defense is still terrible. Or he plays the wing and the scoring isn't as strong as it should be. Like, that's what's going to work against him.
Number one on that list is Jack Hughes. So Jack Hughes with the injury concern, I get if he's healthy and plays 82 games, but the injury concern is always there. Are you feeling that Jack Hughes will be a guy that will consistently now be healthy and produce, or are we rolling the dice? If you're Tom Fitzgerald in New Jersey and, you know, Sheldon Keefe, you're rolling the dice starting every year, not knowing if you're going to have him be your top line center for the full season and into the playoffs.
I'm not at that point yet where they're rolling the dice, but I think if he has another injury, especially anything to one of those shoulders, that injury prone tag is never going to come off. Yeah. But I still look at him and I think of how much he grew last year too. I think Sheldon Keefe is really good at turning really good offensive players into two-way threats. I think that's maybe the biggest strength he brings as a coach, right? And you see how Auston Matthews became the sulky guy under him. So I think Jack Hughes became a better all-around threat. Plus, we know he has the offensive ability. Plus, we know he's good in the playoffs. That if he can be healthy, you know, you're looking at one of the best first-line centers in the league. Under the McKinnon and McDavid tier, like, he could be right there, I think. But it'll be interesting to see, does he do it? Like, now we're saying if already. So it's that, like, little shred of doubt. So that's the one thing to keep an eye on if there's any injuries this year. But the 2 and 3 on that list might be my favorite ones because they're those pesky all-situation wingers. Like, that is the kind of – if I'm building a hockey team, I want 12 Brandon Hagels and Seth Jarvis's. Like, that is what I – that's what I want. If I was
– I didn't
want
to bring Brandon Hagel up because then the Duffer's hat will, like, go up and explode. Like, there'll be steam coming out of those ears because he's always been a Hagel fan.
There's just going to be heart emojis floating across the screen. That's all.
And you know
unicorns, Jeff, unicorn for Brandon Hagel. We need to get it done.
Anytime he comes up, you know, like in SpongeBob, when he says like imagination, the rainbow appears between his hands. Like that's what we need. But hey, I think the Sabres could have Brandon Hagel light at this rate. So if Josh Stone, that's what we're all rooting for here. Okay. We want more Hagels. So we could get Josh Stone to like embody that energy more. And like the pieces are there. Then all of a sudden that's going to be the guy.
Marty, you'll be happy to know, but disappointed that I couldn't snap a picture in the spontaneous moment. But when I was riding the metro in L.A., I zipped past a building that said Unicorn Museum. So maybe on my next trip back, which will be sooner rather than later, knowing me, I'll do a little bit of research. I did want to ask, based on, and this is a question for both of you, since we're heavy into contract discussion and hopefully, in this case, projecting another good contract. It's July 31st. Alex Tuch does not have his extension yet. What would a good extension look like for Alex Tuch? Both of you, please.
It's tough because now I'm looking at it and I go, is Tage Thompson the bar for wingers, right? Like, it's different than it was before with him. Like, if he's the number one winger, technically, right? Then, like, Tuck is your number two. But I feel like for an all-situation threat, because I do like how Tuck can be that, you know, disruptive power killer. If you could get something in the $8 million range, that's pretty good, right? And I think you have to take cap percentage and apply that instead of saying, okay, an internal cap is going to be a flat number because of all the growth that we're going to see. I think something in the $8 million range is like the ideal vibe check. I wouldn't want to go any higher than that because in my opinion, I think Alex Tuch on a contender is your second best winger, not your first.
Do you give him 7 years? Because I think for me, he's going to be 30 at the end of this season. So starting next year when the extension would kick in, that's 30 years old. I wouldn't have a problem giving him 7 years as a 30-year-old. I think that between 30 and 35, he'll still produce at a high level and play in every aspect of the game, penalty kill and all of that. But would you hesitate to give him 7 years? And I think eight and a half, that gets it done for me. Let's move on. Boom, we're good. But are you worried about the term, which could be 7 or 8 years?
I would not want to go 8. I don't like 8-year contracts. If from a team perspective, like I'm generally someone that roots for the player getting the bag. If they get an 8-year deal, great for them. But if we're talking from a team perspective, is that what you should do? I like that 8-year contracts are going to be out because I think they age poorly and then it like turns fans on the players and it's not their fault. They took a good contract. They always should. So I think 7 years is fine. I would try to keep it to six. I really like a 6 year term. And I feel like we're seeing a couple of them. Like when Ehlers comes out and he doesn't go for like that maximum deal, I'm like, okay, this is interesting to me. I think six could be the sweet spot for the Sabres. And then I think you could do 8-5. I think if you're doing seven, I would try to get the number to eight.
What about 4 times 10?
That's bold. I think that would be so fun. Listen, I'm here for these short-term deals. They're such a risk. And you see it with guys like Gavrikov, how well it pays off, right? Because he gets that big deal now. But then you look at the other side of it and someone like Orlov went for that shorter-term deal and it obviously burned him because in 2 years with the Canes, he wasn't what they needed him to be.
But he still got paid in his next deal.
With the Sharks.
Right. It's a nice place to live.
You know what? I feel like, and the vibes are right. The vibes there, if you're going to go to any rebuilding team, that is the place to be.
Dylan Sandberg got a nice deal. It was a lot more than what the Jets were offering in arbitration. They had a $2.5 million 1 year deal in arbitration. He gets 5.75. We may not get any arbitration hearings at all this year because Nick Robertson's the last one. And who knows if that happens. What'd you think of Sandberg and that 1 year deal at 5.75?
I thought he was excellent last year for the Jets. I think he was maybe their most important defenseman. I think he is an elite shutdown defenseman. And I think sometimes we struggle quantifying that in terms of like dollars and cents because you don't have the flashy scoring. But you look around the league and see the deals like the Gus Forslings of the world and go, those deals can pay off if there's someone that's that good. And I think you're getting him in year one of that deal. I mean, I'm sorry, year two of that role.
Yeah.
It's good. I think he could have pushed for more, so I don't have an issue with it. I think it's going to age fine. It's what's that next contract going to look like? But I think he's excellent.
I did say 1 year, but it's three. 3 years at
3 years,
five,
yeah.
Yes.
That's the thing that's tricky, right? Because now he's 30 years old going for his next contract, I think. So that's where things might get a little bit dicier. But again, if we start seeing the league trend towards those shorter contracts, it's totally fine too.
Details are important. Thank you, Marty, for the clarification. Shayna, enjoy the weekend. We'll see you next week.
Honey, thanks deuces. For having me.
Sabres Live wrapping up after this.